Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night program. Tonight we're looking at the question, should black folks participate in the 4th of July celebrations, or as some say, the 4th of July? We'll explore these and other questions when we come back on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
The rhythm plants the seeds of freedom, so we overcome with the rhythm, the drum.
I wanna hear what it means.
Welcome to another edition of Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night radio broadcast. And yes, we are the drum, calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Good evening, family, and welcome to Dare to Win. My name is Brother Kimbizi, and I'm going to be the host for this evening's broadcast. We have a very powerful show lined up. We're glad to welcome once again to the airwaves of Us Lifting Us, our founding board member, Baba Hekima. Good evening, Baba Hekima. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm doing well, brother. I'm sitting here in the Atlanta metropolitan area with firecrackers. It almost sounds like bombs going off all around me. But I'm well. Glad to be back on the program with you.
And it's good to hear your voice. And, you know, when you mentioned the firecrackers going off sounding similar to bombs, it reminds us that there are brothers and sisters in other parts of the world that are actually listening to bombs going off in their neighborhoods and communities, thanks in part to American foreign policy. But that's another conversation for another night. Sisters and brothers, to join tonight's conversation, dial 929-477-2789. Again, that number is 929-477-2789. Then press the number 1 on your phone, on your keypad. We'll see your hand in the studio and open up your lines for you to make a comment or ask a question. Another way to reach us is to go to our website, www.usliftingus.com, That's USLIFTINGUS.com. Click on the Ulu Radio tab, and then click on Listen Live. As I said at the top of the program, tonight we are exploring the question, should black folks participate in the 4th of July celebrations going on around the country? And so, Brother Hakima, why don't you, there are many members in our community and listening audience who take the position that the 4th of July and the celebration of American independence is illegitimate for us. African-descended persons in this country, we have a different reality. So give us your thoughts on that, and what would you have us to think about?
Well, thank you for the thank you for the question. Of course, we don't deny that that the American experience happened. Certainly, there were settlers to quote unquote what they call the New World, to the Americas, who were determined to carve out an existence for themselves. And for the most part, the people who identified themselves as Americans and as the prime movers for their quote-unquote revolution were the vestiges of the European trading companies and the aristocrats for the most part. And it certainly didn't include the general population. It didn't include the native population, the indigenous people to these lands, and it didn't include the Africans who were involved in the North American slave trade. So the fact that we are now being invited into celebrating the victory of these few individuals from their motherland, England, it's almost an insult that we would be invited. Well, I shouldn't say almost. It's an insult, in my opinion, to be invited into that celebration. Of course, many of us don't take it from that position. We say simply that that we're a part of this. We helped build it. We shed blood in many battles, including the initial battle, the war for independence. And so many of us take the position that since we've paid the price, we should benefit from the experiment, from the spoils. But I think if we're sober, we know that the American narrative, the story of America, in all of its flowery language, was a lie from the beginning. And, you know, not to take it too far, is that we were not liberated at that time that they talk about July the 4th, and there's some dispute about the dates as well. But I just think that for those of us who say that the 4th of July is an illegitimate holiday for us, we can't stop at that. We've got to take it to its logical conclusion. And if it's illegitimate for us as a date of independence, then what is our date of independence? What is the status of our desire for freedom, for independence, for sovereignty even? And so I guess the 4th of July and other European holidays that are almost forced on our people causes me at least to think through and ponder what is my responsibility, what is our responsibility to carve out an existence for us that we can celebrate for us as an Independence Day. And I said to you, you know, a couple of days ago in a quote that we very often repeat from John Henry Clark, and he says, freedom is something that you take with your own hands or you don't have it. And so the freedom that we yearn, we have yet to take with our own hands. And so I'll stop there and just say that for those of us who, and it's millions of us, even though we go through the motions, maybe even we barbecue, we may even throw a firecracker, but we know that the celebration is hollow for us. But ULU and many other formations call on us to do the hard work to develop plans, systems, and institutions that would allow us in the future to have our own celebration of independence.
Thank you, Brother Hakima. I was just listening to that quote that you shared from Brother John Henry Clark. Freedom is something you take with your own hands or you don't have it. That raises the question in my mind, and I would put to our listening audience this evening, are we free? I think many of us, or some of us anyway, are confused on this point. If you're saying that Dr. John Henry Clark said freedom is something you take with your own hands or you don't have it, A, are you saying that we haven't taken it, and B, we don't have it? What is our status in North America as you view our condition?
Well, I would think that most brothers and sisters, by whatever name we call ourselves, African Americans, Black, you know, Pan Africanists, just melanated people, whatever we call ourselves, probably before we exit elementary school, we know that we're not free. And in this country and in most countries, I would say they're all countries, the definition of a citizen is a full participant in the social experiment, a full participant. We know that we're not full participants. We've never been full participants. And even though we've had the Emancipation Proclamation and several amendments that spoke to the status of Africans in this country, but at no time did we participate in that decision. It was a decision by the U.S. government and people associated with it to, quote-unquote, abolish slavery. But it was their citizen, their decision also to reintegrate us back into the American system as, I'm not sure what it was, as some legal, having some legal status. But certainly it was not a citizen. It was not a person who had the full rights of participation. And so the question of are we free, I think every intelligent person on the planet understands that we're not free. Well, maybe that's stretching it too far, but an intelligent thinking person, we know that, for instance, the African in America, if we were in fact free, we wouldn't have to self-identify as a separate and distinct people, and we do. We have our own flag. We have our own national anthem. We have our own music, our own rhythm. There's so much about us that emphatically expresses that we are the other, that we are not a part of this. And if we didn't have that, I think we would go mad. But anyway, the question of are we free and are we citizens? Emphatically not, even from a legalistic point of view. Again, the basic criteria, if you're not a full participant, then you're not a citizen. I mean, if that's the strict definition, a full participant in the body politics. Now, if you have to have legislation that protects, quote-unquote, your voting rights, your civil rights, and other things, from a strict legal position, you're either a full participant or you're not a full participant. And if you're not a full participant, then that doesn't mean that you don't have some kind of quasi-status. We're here. Many of us are here. But we know that and we've talked about capitalism in some of our previous shows, we know that the dominant economic force and system in this country thrives off of people being debased, scattered, fragmented, and marginalized so that it takes economic advantage of them. And I would even say some Europeans fall into that category. But I don't want to take it far afield. I would just say that after emancipation, there is essentially a human rights requirement that African people, and of course we know that there were African people here already, but at least the African people who were part of the slave trade and who were covered based on the Emancipation Proclamation and 13th Amendment, that there was a requirement for those individuals to participate in a decision of what would be their fate. We didn't have a chance to say, look each other in the eye and say that we wanted to go back to our motherland, or that we wanted to go someplace else in the world, or that we wanted a separate territory of our own where we could fly our own flags. But the decision that was made to disallow those other considerations and to fold us back into the plantation system was not a decision of our own. It was we never had a chance to participate in a plebiscite or a vote. A means of expressing what our desire was. And for some of us, we take the position that we are simply a free people in the Americas, and the decision of our status is still to be formed, but by our own hands, in my opinion. But anyway, I'll stop there and just simply say emphatically, if you're not a full participant, then there's some question of citizenship.
Well, thank you, Baba Hakima. Your response gives us a lot to think about. I was struck when you said that at the time of the passage of the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery, that we as a people in this country were not allowed to make the decision whether or not we would stay here, whether we would return to the motherland, whether we would seek some other place to live. Those choices were not made available to us. So what that raises in my mind then is the question of Do we fully understand what it means to be a self-determining people? And going back to Dr. Henry Clark's statement, freedom is something you take with your own hands. I don't sense that we have been operating with the understanding that these are decisions and choices that only we can make. I think to a large degree there are segments of our community waiting for someone else to make these decisions for us. And going back to your original statement, either we do this ourselves or we don't have the end result that we desire. So what would you say to us in terms of deepening our understanding of what it means to be self-determining? And if you can, if not pushing it too far, if you can link that with why sovereignty then becomes a part of understanding self-determination in the way that you're talking about it.
Yes, and as you indicate, there are elements of our community who haven't come to grips with the things that we're talking about, but there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of us who have, and who in one way or another yearn for self-determination, for sovereignty. And I would simply say that, and of course you may remember we had Brother Ezra Aharon on the airways with us maybe once or twice. But in his book, The Sovereign Psyche, he points out and he leads us to understand that a people don't develop a sovereign psyche overnight. It's an evolutionary process. And what we have gone through for the most part is testing what others would say were our rights as citizens in America. And as more and more of us determine that that promise is hollow at best, it's diabolical in another sense, but that it's hollow at best, then it takes us a minute, I think, to understand that the responsibility to develop the way, the process, the systems, and the institutions that would give us what we really yearn for are institutions and systems that we have to fashion ourselves. We have to not only fashion them, we have to grow them, we have to tweak them here and there, and then these become social tools, economic, political, cultural tools that we use to carve out our own space on the planet. And in some cases, it's not space that is sovereign space. It's not space that we have a government and an army and on our own currency. It's space, it's safe space, but that is growing to become even safer and even more protective of our self-interest as we learn how to carve out space on land and actually declare ourselves an independent people or join with others, whether on the continent or the Caribbean, and join with them and help them and us to secure the kind of life that not only do we want for ourselves, but that we want for future generations. But back to the statement by John Henry Clark, freedom is something you take with your own hands or you don't have it, is really a bold statement. It's a statement of clarity. And so there is a recognized right of self-determination, at the international level. As a matter of fact, there's a little booklet that you can get from the UN on the UN Declaration of the Rights of Self-Determination. It goes beyond human rights. It every human has a right to, you know, certain standards that all humanity agree upon. But a group of people who define themselves as a nation and who meet certain criteria also have the right of self-determination. In other words, as a group, human rights basically, for the most part, speaks to individual rights. The right of self-determination speaks to group rights. And at the UN, there are Africans from this hemisphere who argue every day on the rights of us for self-determination. And they come from the Americas, a strong group, the Lost Found Nation of Islam, under the leadership of Salas Muhammad, has done some great work at the UN over the years. But I don't want to lose myself in the dialogue here.
What you said in terms of, I remember the conversation we had with Brother Ezra Aharon on his book, Sovereign Psyche.
Yeah.
And that was a very helpful conversation that evening. Part of what he was arguing was that we first have to hold the idea of being a sovereign and self-determining people in our minds. In other words, that has to be a psychic reality before it will manifest and become a physical reality on the sidewalk. And so just beginning to allow that seed thought to germinate in our minds is a critical step in arriving at what is really self-determining behavior. It seems to me that as you and I are talking, the reason that the full weight of what Dr. Clark is saying, that this idea of freedom, and it's interesting, this idea of freedom is something that we as African-descended people in the United States or wherever we are in the diaspora or even on the continent, that this is something that we have to do ourselves. So the challenge that we're confronted with is, here we are in the United States. Every 4th of July, we go through these celebrations, and we watch these colonizers and settlers celebrate their conquest of this hemisphere, watch them celebrate their power to not only exterminate the indigenous people that were here, but to enslave millions of our people from the African continent and force us to labor here for free. That's really part of this celebration, and I think we have looked away from that very ugly truth. But I think it's critical that we begin to face that head on and acknowledge the fact that this is a celebration of white nationalism and white power. And it's taking on an even uglier tone under the current administration. So if there ever was a time that we need to be very serious about building our own institutions and carving out, as you said, our own space, now is the time to stop deluding ourselves about what really is being celebrated on these 4th of July celebrations. Maybe even just make it our national term, 4th of July, to remind ourselves of the work that is still in front of us to do. But Baba, hey, Kima, let's take a quick music break here. Again, for those who are listening and want to join the conversation, if you dial 929 877-277-2789. And press the number 1 on your phone. That will put your hand up in the studio. We'll see you, and we'll come to your phone and open the line and receive your comment or your question. Just before we take the break, we have a caller at 3440. Would you tell us your name and where you're calling from, and then give us your comment or raise your question? Your line is open.
Greetings, brothers. This is Brother Shabaka calling from Baltimore, Maryland. You have a very powerful show. Powerful show. I had to try to close the doors. I'm hearing bombs go off right outside my area, and it's bombs by us. We're doing the firecrackers and everything. But what I wanted to ask, well, it is related to the behavior of my neighbors outside, and this will go on until midnight, and so I'll have to tolerate it. But importantly, I agree with everything that has been said and discussed in describing what has happened to us, that we have no real ownership in celebrating this holiday. But many of us do, maybe 95%, 98%. What do you see as an organizing strategy or educational strategy that could be used at least to put a slight dent, make it real reliable for us that we need to identify our own holidays that has critical meaning for us and that we see as being monumental in leading us towards or bringing us to sovereignty or independence that we're currently not necessarily illustrating right now. So I'll hang up and listen for your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka. Very, very powerful question. Appreciate your listening. And Brother Hakima, what would you say to Brother Shabaka?
I guess the first part of his question was, it seemed to suggest that a model or tools that we could use to demonstrate what it would mean to be independent and sovereign. And then the latter part of his question about holidays, I'm not sure about those. But I do think, and you alluded to it right before you were ready to go to break when you talked about Ezra Aharon's book in terms of holding this psychic thought in place, holding it long enough and dealing with it seriously enough to produce actual institutions, even though they may be small, seemingly insignificant at one point, very early in their lifespan. But I just think that it's incumbent upon the few of us, and I don't think that they're as few as we sometimes would number. I think they're in the hundreds of thousands. But those of us who yearn sincerely to be self-determined and independent and eventually sovereign, the task of taking the years, the decades, it doesn't matter how long it takes, to put these solid institutions in place that speak to our self-interest and our self-interest alone. There's a saying, and maybe I can use it to more strongly suggest what I'm saying. There's a saying that it's easier to give birth than to revive the dead. Mm. And what is meant by that, in my opinion, when we seek redress from the American Empire, from the UN, from the other international bodies, when we expect that other people would modify their self-interest to accommodate our self-interest, that's tantamount to reviving the dead. Nobody's ever done that in the history of mankind. Every people who have enjoyed a modicum of success in the world, who rose to the level of respect and power in the world, did so under their own steam. No people have been granted liberation, respect, power. That's tantamount to raising the dead. And so I say, even though on a day-to-day basis it may seem easier just to set off your firecracker and celebrate with the general public, ultimately, it will not yield success. And so to give birth to the legitimate, the functioning we, even though it may seem the more difficult task, but at least it has the chance of having success. The task of appealing to others to grant us what they cannot grant is not only insane, but it's tantamount to reviving the dead. And I'm sure when I made that statement, I kind of took some of the people in the audience aback. But again, in terms of Shabaka's question, if I understand it correctly, those of us who desire freedom for our people, we have got to keep the thought, the energy, and not only that, our resources, our ingenuity, our every being in focus, so that we bring into creative existence tools and institutions that would allow us to fare better and then grow those institutions. I hear the music in the background, and I'm sure
we're
ready
getting ready
to
go to the break.
All right.
And on that note, we're going to listen to Sister Aretha Franklin for just a few minutes, and then we're going to come back and pick up on that thought that you put out there about giving birth to our own institutions. So stay tuned, family. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Family, again, to join the conversation, dial 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your keypad, and that will raise your hand in our studio, and we'll see you and open your line to hear your comment or your question. Just before we went to break, Baba Hekima was saying that what we have to do is build our own institutions. That is how we begin to carve out the space, both psychic and physical, that allows us to live the kind of lives we yearn for. And Sister Aretha Franklin reminds us that if we're going to be really self-respecting, it's time that we stop appealing to those who have demonstrated their antipathy towards us and take our own future in our own hands. So, Baba Hakima, I would ask you as we go into this next segment, talk to us about the process and the methodology of beginning to build these nascent institutions that can grow into global entities, protecting us, providing for us, and even something that we can pass on to future generations.
Yes, and of course, there are good examples in the world, good examples in history as well. But as we focus and beyond focus, as we almost be still and fully determine that we're going to be that we're going to create the kind of world and society that we want for ourselves, understanding that, yes, we're in an environment. But we often, as an analogy, if there was a national catastrophe, a forest fire, a hurricane, a tornado, something that tore up the neighborhood, the community, our natural instinct would be to look at our capacity to rebuild, and in some cases to build anew, not even to rebuild what had been destroyed, but to even think of something else. But if we were obsessed with cursing the storm, even petitioning for it to turn around and come back and make the corrections, clean up the damage that it had made, somebody would come and put us in a straitjacket. But the same is true in terms of human interaction. A catastrophe happened to us, and, you know, our houses were blown down, our lives were destroyed. In other words, damage was done, and it's still being done. There is no sane, in my opinion, there is no sane reason why we don't understand that it's no different than a physical catastrophe. The responsibility is on the living, the aware, the conscious individual standing on the ground now to fashion the kind of community, the kind of nation that they need. So in saying that, if we're able to take that position, obviously that's not an easy thing to do, because we participate in an economy, we participate in a society on a day-to-day basis, and we are part and parcel of that. But our salvation is going to be that we compartmentalize, and that a good part of our attention is focused on giving birth. And that attention, that intent, is the germ seed of our ultimate success. So, and the intensity of that intent and attention. So what we simply do is, from our own being, think of and test methods. But we also look at methods that other people have toured with and have had success in other parts of the world. Of course, you and I, we are part of Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. And so we take part in looking at tools, primarily economic at this point, that will allow us to be more successful in the environment, to protect ourselves, to promote our self-interest, and to grow that from small to large. right now on the planet, throughout the known world, there are people who are experimenting with new forms of economic activity. It's called the sharing economy, economic democracy. But at the heart of it are institutions that are illegally cooperatives. And almost every nation on the planet have legislation where they allow people to form cooperative societies by whatever particular name they may have, and whatever particular form they may have. And so part of what we are saying in Us Lifting Us, and by the way, the full name for those of us in the audience who may not know, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. In other words, our co-op is for the purpose of economic development, and it's in our name. And, of course, the first part of our name, Us Lifting Us, it's as if John Henry Clark had fashioned it. In other words, no one's going to lift us but us. And so what we have done and what others have done is to look at models of economic activity that could be lifted to a large scale and to make monumental differences in the lives of people. Again, around the world, the best examples are in northern Italy, northern Spain, Canada, but in the UK as well, Argentina. But again, in almost every country, even in the U.S., there are experiments with these new forms of economic activity. And so if our intent is to be self-determined, then it's natural that we would look at economics as one of the foundations of that that new alignment with ourselves vis-a-vis other people in the world. And so we have formed an economic engine called Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC. And so I guess in summation, and I know we're getting close to the end of the hour, and we may want to be more specific in terms of our model, but I would say that I look back at the Nation of Islam under the leadership of Elijah Muhammad. And in my teenage years, with some of our family members being a part of the Nation of Islam and the business foundation that was laid then, and we can probably point to other examples as well, but if we had not been persuaded to drop some of those activities, some of that thrust, it's no telling where we would be today in terms of having, at least from an economic standpoint, built another foundation. But I'm kind of rambling now, so let me stop here and use you to get back on track.
You've given us a lot to think about. You started us off saying that it is easier to give birth than to revive the dead. And then you said something that really caught my ear. You said it is our intent, and then the intensity of that intent, that starts the process.
There's an experiment. Let me share this with you, if I can quickly. There was an experiment somewhere, probably on a university campus, where they allowed pure energy to flow through a vacuum tube, and they could measure no particles. In other words, the machinery that they were using, they could identify no particles but just the pure flow of energy. And what happened, they then focused one human mind on the stream of energy. And just because that mind focused on the energy, particles began to appear. I'd have to go back and find what this was. But in other words, intent and attention in that experiment brought particle matter into being where there was no particle matter before. So without intent, you cannot give birth in the sphere that we're talking about. But with intent, you can give it. And with intent over time, you can grow it. And I think from a social standpoint, that's essentially what all people have always done. They have had an intention to be free, and that intention became intense, such that in some cases they were willing to give their lives and take lives. They were able to sacrifice in many ways to bring about a new birth, a new reality. So I just wanted to make mention of that experiment. And again, I would be hard-pressed to go back and find it, but I'm sure we can find it.
We certainly can. And I want to thank you for giving that that example that certainly brings a lot of clarity to the ideas that we are discussing. The other point that I was going to make before you gave us that example was that when you said it is easier to give birth, and then you referenced the us lifting us building these economic tools. And often our community has been told that we have to do the political work before we can do the economic work. And I'm in support of your position that actually it's the economic work that needs to precede the political work. And because we can control and shape the economic work, in other words, this is not something that has to be voted on by the legislature. It doesn't have to go through the U.S. Senate or the Supreme Court. These are tools that we can craft right now in our own hands. We have all the resources at our fingertips that allow for this to happen. So it really is just a matter of intent, our intent to build these economic tools, and the intensity that we pour into it to achieve our desired goals. So in the time that we do have remaining, let's share with our audience the steps to become a part of Us Lifting Us, and share to the degree that we can a vision of how this is looking and will look as it begins to come out of its infancy and grow.
Yes. I would encourage brothers and sisters who are in the listening audience who are new to Us Lifting Us to, first of all, visit our website, usliftingus.com. Again, usliftingus.com. There's three videos on the homepage. The top video lays out our basic model, and it's At Last, I think, is the title. At least the wording that you would see. So what we're proposing and what we are offering to our community is the opportunity and the more than opportunity, obligation to build models that help us go in a different direction. Most brothers and sisters would agree that we should control the economics of our own community. Emphatically, we agree. Many of us. But then when you ask the question, then by what method, how can that be done, then we don't have a good answer. It's incumbent upon us to have a good answer because that is the desire of our people. We want to control the economics, the politics, and the culture of our own community. But we know that if you don't control the economics, as you just pointed out, then the real power will elude us. And so what we are doing, we're answering the question for our community, how do we incrementally gain greater and greater control of the economics of our community? And so we're fashioning tools to do that. we're in the Atlanta metropolitan area, at least I am, and it said that more than 100,000 black businesses exist in this metropolitan area. You don't sense the power. So we know just by starting a new black business of encouraging entrepreneurship, which we should and which we must, but that alone will not give us the power that we need, the control that we need. So what Ulu is suggesting strongly is that we look at other models that are based on group ownership as opposed to individual ownership. And we call it family-centered economics as opposed to, again, individually-centered economics. We need both. And as we grow that sector of our community that is group-owned, then we enter a new phase where we can do some things for the overall community that we could never do with just simply individually owned businesses. So we encourage people to look at our model, to turn Ulu upside down, to shake it and see what falls out. And we encourage you to consider becoming a member and partner in Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us is legally is a limited liability company. And a member is a full partner in the company, positioning themselves to take responsibility for leadership, for control, but also position themselves eventually as we become profitable to position themselves to participate in the profit sharing aspect of Us Lifting Us. So again, it's simply, and it's not simple, of course. It's difficult. It's some hard work. But from a logical point of view, and man, I'm hearing bombs around here. My house just shook. Well, what we're asking brothers and sisters to do your due diligence and to press us on the logic, the systems that we've put in place. By the way, when a brother and sister goes on our website and requests additional information, even before they are a member, we send them a 22-page operating agreement. That's like our bylaws. We send them a 4-page values and ethics document because we don't want to encourage membership in Ulu from brothers and sisters who don't really understand what they're doing. It'd be much better that we have a good discussion, maybe even a debate before you become a member so you understand what you're getting yourself into and who you are in joining with us. So uslifting us.com, our phone number is 404-592-2780. And to email us, it's info@usliftingus.com.
Well, thank you, Brother Hakima.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing we would add is there's a $50 membership, annual membership fee, and after the first year, that $50 can go towards the purchase of a co-op unit. And we do encourage our members who are able and as they are able to purchase a co-op unit at $1,000 for the unit. It's those $1,000 co-op units that enable us to open businesses. So just think about for every firecracker that we hear going off tonight, if that was a dollar bill and we all pool those into Us Lifting Us, we could build businesses. That's the whole idea of taking freedom ourselves. And that's the thing that we do control. Everybody's got something in their wallet or their pocketbook. What we're saying is time to pool whatever that is into an economic institution or entity or business that we control and begin to build cooperative businesses that employ us, that create a surplus enabling us to provide for the education of our children, and that also result in a dividend going back to our members. So we're right at the 10 o'clock hour. We want to thank everyone on the call. Thank Brother Shabaka for calling in. Baba Hekima, you certainly have given us much to think about. You've grounded it in fact and helped us to really understand that this is in our hands. We can do this. And Us Lifting Us has laid out the step-by-step methodology to make this a real, to take this vision from a vision to reality. As we close, we're going out on Pharoah Sanders' You Got to Have Freedom. It's time that we move from the illusion of freedom to hardcore freedom, to what John Henry Clark said. Freedom is something you take with your own hands or you don't have it. Let's put our hands together and take the freedom and build the sovereign institutions that allow us to give our children a future. Thank you, Baba Hekima. Okay. Thank you, listening audience. We'll see you next Thursday, 9 o'clock, same channel, same station. Peace, family.